I'm Canada Land senior producer Bruce Thorson, and today we ask the question, can Mark Carney stop the rot in the Canadian Armed Forces?
I would say that all of this spending that we're talking about, all of it from pistols, drones to fighter jets and submarines, none of it is going to make sense unless Canadians are willing to join the armed forces.
Wait for that.
There you go, assess.
Hey, we're not going to do it.
Okay.
No way.
Keep it coming. That's it. Give up power.
Altitude.
Off you go.
Oh,
that's it. Keep flying. You're fighting them.
Damn it.
Let's go. Get your nose on them. Pull, 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 pull. Power. Tighter.
Altitude.
Bailing. Go to where he was.
Where he was.
Think about power now. All the way back. Down. Think about the altitude. Gun.
You got a shot.
Gun. There you go. Keep gunning them. Watch the floor. Terminate. Terminate.
What you just heard was a dogfight between two Canadian F-18 Hornets. The technical term is basic fighter maneuvers, or BFM. It's the core of training new fighter pilots at the 410 Squadron in Cold Lake, Alberta. I know this because once upon a time, I went to fighter pilot school. Well, I was there on the base in Cold Lake, and I was going to the classes, but I wasn't actually a fighter pilot. I was part of a documentary crew making an 8-part series for Discovery Channel on training Canada's next class of fighter pilots. The show is called Jetstream, and you can find it on YouTube now. It's a great show, if I do say so myself. Anyway, the documentary crew I was in, basically, we moved on to Cold Lake Air Force Base right before the first day of fighter pilot school, and we filmed for months on end, all the way until graduation. At that time, I was working on a bunch of shows for Discovery and History Channels. Shows like Ice Pilots NWT, Cold Water Cowboys, and even a brief, if inglorious, stint on Ice Road Truckers. Anyway, Mark Carney is nation-building, and to do that, he needs to rebuild the Canadian Armed Forces. In between decades of neglect and the force's own goals by way of bad headlines, this is no mean feat. But he has begun.
The Canadian Armed Forces is short almost 13,000 personnel. To try and recruit and retain more members, Prime Minister Mark Carney's boosting pay based on rank. The most junior members will benefit the most with a 20% raise.
Canada's not seen something like this millennium. It hasn't seen it since the late 1990s, so it's a generational shift.
And as he warms up his pitch to spend billions on jets, drones, boots, I wonder just how Ice Road Truckers will come into play. Because I have a theory about Ice Road Truckers and Ice Pilots NWT and Deadliest Catch, and all the other successful Discovery shows and how they might undermine Carney's national dreaming. You see, my theory goes like this. All successful Discovery shows are built around cowboys, which means that the shows feature men. Well, mostly men, who make their own rules. They're rugged individuals who fish and drive and fly and pan for gold, just the way they want to. Nobody's going to tell them what to do and what not to do. They're cowboys. They call their own shots. They take their own chances, pay for their own failures. And of course, because it's TV, they almost always win. The reason these shows have such devoted followings is because the men, and again, it's mostly men in the Discovery demographic, the men who watch these shows are not cowboys. They go to work every day where someone tells them what to do. They come home to spouses and kids who also tell them what to do. Everywhere they turn are rules, submission, responsibility. So what could be better than watching a show where the characters have none of that, have nothing but a big F you to rules and bosses? Well, that's solve for the put-upon soul, which, is why Carney might be facing a bit of an uphill battle. What I've been talking about with Ice Road Truckers and the success of Discovery shows generally is just one symptom of a society that's long been bent on individualism, the worship of it, the striving for it, and the self-absorption of it. If you've never watched Discovery, all you need to do is think about the navel-gazing and self-aggrandizement that thrives on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok.
You got weapons, Sep?
Yep, coming in. Come over top.
Jetstream was a great show, packed with Top Gun aerial filming, literal life and death scenarios, brave and brilliant characters. But it never made it to a second season. I wasn't in the room for the call on that, but I suspect part of it was that it didn't get past one season because it portrayed people, fighter pilots, who were part of a hierarchy, who lived for the rules, not least because the rules kept them alive. These were characters who strove to see the greater good of serving the country. Problem is, audiences don't want that. They want cowboys. And soldiers aren't cowboys. So how will Carney convince a nation of wannabe cowboys to switch from self-aggrandizement to self-sacrifice? Today, I'm speaking with Wesley Wark. Professor Wark was formerly a National Security and Intelligence Advisor to Stephen Harper. These days, you can find him on Substack, where he writes on everything from whether CSIS can spy overseas to espionage in space. And I've got a quote here from Wark, and it's about the difficulty of getting people to back defense spending in Canada. This is the quote. There is a sense among private sector big investors that investing in defense is kind of like investing in the white slave trade or prostitution or drugs. End quote. So how will the Prime Minister convince the Canadian public to rebuild the embattled Canadian armed forces? Wait for it.
There are a lot of aircraft on exciting missions in the Canadian Armed Forces and challenging jobs for good people with the regular forces or the reserves, pilots and navigators and others. If you've got what it takes, we've got a great life for you.
There's no life like it. There's no life like it.
We're the Canadian Armed Forces. Look for us in the Yellow Pages under Recruiting.
Hello, Wesley.
Bruce, nice to be chatting with you.
I'd like to start this episode, actually, with a first. I think it's fair to say that in the 1,200 episodes so far of Canada Land, no one has ever said the following sentence. Are you ready for it?
Sure.
Okay, here's the sentence that I'm pretty sure no one has ever said. Let's talk Latvia.
Well, that would be a shame, but understandable, perhaps.
In the forests near Riga, Latvia, military training in a country that shares a nearly 300-kilometer-long border with Russia.
I'm in a LAV-6, a Canadian light armored vehicle, and the military is taking us out to take part in one of their exercises. They're basically simulating what it would be like to try to recapture territory from an enemy.
A little bit of geographical information here. Latvia is a Baltic nation. To the west is Sweden, and Russia is to the east. Latvia has just a little under 2 million people.
This large NATO exercise started at the beginning of November. It involves 3,500 troops from 13 different countries, more than half Canadian. Canada has committed to lead the NATO forces here until 2026. The country's chief of defense staff believes the deployment will last beyond that.
I think considering the actions of Russia and what's going on in terms of threat, we can expect Canada to be here for a long time.
Briar Stewart, CBC News, near Riga, Latvia.
We have showed up on the scene in Latvia desperately underarmed. We didn't bring drones. We didn't bring self-propelled artillery. We didn't bring air defense systems. We didn't bring tanks. We've got a few there now. All of the kinds of key pieces of military equipment that a modern armed forces in a deployment in a dangerous zone needs to have, the Canadian Armed Forces didn't have. We just didn't bring the hardware. And it was a perfect example of the state of erosion and rot within the Canadian Armed Forces.
Last year, the CBC reported that almost half of the military's equipment is considered unavailable and unserviceable. A stat came from an internal Department of National Defense presentation. It bears repeating, half of the military's equipment is considered unavailable and unserviceable.
It is impossible to overstate the degree to which Canada is so far behind in these developments. And drones are an interesting example of one of the challenges. One of the key lessons that comes out of the Ukraine war is no armed forces can operate effectively today in terms of delivering weapons, protecting itself, collecting intelligence, without a really very significant drone capability. And so the Ukrainians are talking about manufacturing from their own resources 1 million drones a year. Many other countries around the world are trying to ramp up drone production. You know, the official numbers of drones that we have currently available to Canadian Armed Forces is highly classified, I'm guessing. But I'm going to put the number at about 50, just as a guess.
The United States Embassy in Ottawa is a long, low, stone-faced hulk of a building. To some, it looks like an attack submarine. Others have likened it to an aircraft carrier. It spreads its dismal bulk down Sussex Drive. From its windows, you can see the East Block of Parliament. Nearby is a monument to Canadian peacekeepers. Just a little further afield is the famous Louise Bourgeois sculpture of a gigantic spider that guards the entrance to the National Gallery of Canada. The architectural trio seems suddenly perfect for our times. A menacing U.S. war machine and a monstrous spider caught between a handful of well-meaning Canadian peacekeepers in uniform, looking out on a vanished past.
This is something I published in the Walrus magazine, which was really trying to reflect on what kinds of threats does the United States in particular pose to Canada. I don't take seriously the idea that the United States is going to engage in a military invasion of Canada, but I do take seriously the idea that the United States is going to put all kinds of pressure on Canada under the Trump administration, use all kinds of tactics, some of which will amount to forms of hybrid warfare. When it comes to economic coercion, information manipulation, political pressure, and so on. So it was meant to be a kind of warning essay, cautionary tale. And I thought it was fitting to start with a bit of poetic language.
What's unfolding is the opening act of hybrid warfare. We know about hybrid cars, hybrid work, but hybrid warfare is sometimes called gray zone warfare. Hybrid warfare can involve economic pressure, political intimidation, disinformation campaigns, influence operations, and cyber attacks.
We have to fear it. We have to hope that it will never really materialize to a significant degree. But we can't take that for granted or be complacent, I don't think, about the kinds of threats the United States may pose to us in this gray zone. People will say, well, if if that's the world we're facing, the world of gray zone warfare, why are we spending so much money on what looks like a conventional military? Well, we're not going to try and build just a conventional military. We're going to have to build a 21st century military that is itself going to be capable of resisting all kinds of hybrid threats. The idea of developing or renewing a Canadian military capacity for defense and security is in itself a way to try and fend off some of these American pressures so that we could say to the United States, we're fully capable of protecting our airspace. We don't need you there. We're fully capable of protecting our waterways. We don't need you patrolling the Northwest Passage. We don't need your military presence in the Canadian Arctic. We have to be able to demonstrate that we have a sovereign capacity. This is a bit of a sidebar, of course, Bruce, but one of the things that always struck me about the challenges that Canada is facing in dealing with China, and these came up particularly strongly in the context of the hostage diplomacy around the two Michaels, is that a country like China, and this would be true of Russia as well, some of these, you know, major adversaries that we face on the international stage, how do they perceive Canada? Well, they perceive Canada as a weak country that is essentially a puppet of the United States. So we're almost, you know, begging defense help from our allies in the context of that international perception. We have a responsibility to change that perception through real action as we try and separate ourselves a bit from the degree of dependency that we've allowed to grow in security and defense relations and economic relations with the United States.
As the world becomes more divided and dangerous, Canadians are uniting. Together, we'll rebuild, rearm, and reinvest in our armed forces, because Canadian leadership is defined not only by the strength of our values, but also by the value of our strength. This is the greatest nation on earth. Together, we'll keep making it even better. Happy Canada Day.
So how exactly do we make the greatest nation on earth even better? Clearly, Carney's lines are not to be confused with making it great again.
Canadian leadership is defined not only by the strength of our values, but also by the value of our strength.
You can make those kinds of statements, but you're going to have to go far beyond that to really, I think, convince Canadians who are going to be asked to face sacrifices, perhaps in terms of other services, in terms of higher taxes. There's going to be an unmistakable economic impact of having to spend. And, you know, the challenge is that this is, again, an idea that we haven't faced for a very long time. So it's not in anybody's memory. World War II veterans are gone. Korean War veterans are gone. The kinds of sums that are now being talked about in the billions on Canadian defense in a short period of time. So Canadians are rightly going to, you know, demand that the government explain this and explain it as comprehensively and clearly as they can. Slogans are not going to cut it. Let's face it, the military is a kind of invisible element of Canadian society, by and large.
Invisible. Back to Latvia. Latvia is Canada's largest overseas commitment since Afghanistan. The peak number of troops in Afghanistan at one time was 2,300. Right now, we have 2,000 in Latvia. It's our biggest commitment since Afghanistan, but how many Canadians actually know about it?
Whoever sees the Canadian Armed Forces in their day-to-day lives, unless you happen to live close by a military base, otherwise the military is invisible and little known to Canadians. You know, and on top of that, military service is not something that touches many Canadian families these days. The idea of joining the military has not been a popular idea for Canadian youth for a very long time.
A lot of people talk about it.
Ah, don't hand me that. If they want peace in Cyprus, all they have to do is give some thought to the way they handle...
Are you kidding me? If I were running that Gaza Strip thing, I wouldn't pull any punches. The first thing they got...
This is a recruitment ad from the Department of National Defense from 1965. And yes, it refers 60 years ago to that Gaza Strip thing.
The Canadian Armed Forces. Give it some thought. A lot of people talk about it. Join the ones who are doing something about it.
Think about what used to be the main attraction for young Canadians joining the armed forces. And, you know, this gross generalization, of course, and it didn't always work out for everybody, but it was some combination of a sense of adventure and seeing the world.
What kind of man joins Canada's armed forces? He is a certain kind of guy who loves his country and wants to keep it safe. Wants to help someone in trouble a long way from here. Wants to see Cyprus or Egypt.
Well, that sense of adventure went away, seeing the world went away, because there was nothing to be adventurous about, and the Canadian Armed Forces weren't going out in the world.
Wants to get paid for it. Wants a bunch of good friends. Guys who are real pros at what they're doing. Wants to see just how tough service life is. The Canadian Armed Forces. Give it some thought.
I would say that all of this spending that we're talking about, all of it from pistols, drones, to fighter jets and submarines, none of it is going to make sense unless Canadians are willing to join the armed forces.
Recruitment ad, 1965.
You know what's tough? Canada's armed forces are tough.
Recruitment ad, 2024.
You've likely seen and heard a lot of different things about basic training. The instructors are not here to break you. Their goal is to build you up, mentor you, help you find your inner strength.
What kind of man joins Canada's armed forces? He is a certain kind of guy who loves his country and wants to keep it safe. Wants to help someone in trouble.
Join other recruits in a self-contained mega-complex, complete with dormitory, gym, cafeteria, and school facility.
You have to stand up for your country and be willing to take it. You have to be strong and look to the future with the aim of really accomplishing something.
Where overcoming anxiety and fear is key.
What kind of guy are you? The kind who wants to take it the easy way?
Graduation day is a heartfelt day. You earned it.
Give it some thought.
What we're talking about is a new generation of Canadians. Canadians aged 18 to 25 who are going to join the military and be prepared to stay in the military and make careers of it. That career has to be one that is attractive to Canadians, young Canadians. I had this conversation with the commander of the Canadian Land Forces, General Mike Wright. One of the things that he talked about in that conversation was the need for the Canadian Armed Forces to be a place where a generation of young Canadians can see themselves and have the tools available to them that they're used to. And by tools, he meant, you know, things like sophisticated software and IT capabilities and the ability to work cyber weapons, the ability to fly drones of various kinds, which, you know, he is convinced is going to be critical to the future armed forces. The Canadian government is going to have to engage in a sales project to explain a new look Canadian military and why it should be an attractive career. If they fail at that, the whole enterprise, we shouldn't be spending any money on the Canadian Armed Forces. We could just turn ourselves into an Iceland, or I think Costa Rica still doesn't have an armed forces. It'd be dangerous to do that. But you have to have a new generational input into the armed forces. We're way behind in terms of regular force strength, way behind in terms of reserve strength. And all the scandals that keep coming out about inappropriate behavior, Facebook groups, right-wing, you know, militia attempts in the military, none of that is helping. And all of that has to be stamped out, you know, as rapidly as possible, quite apart from the long train of sexual misconduct and racist stereotyping that seems to have affected the military over the years. The other thing I will say, and this is part of this nation-building project that the military is going to be part of, Canadians are going to have to be convinced that the Arctic matters to everybody, not just the Inuit and indigenous populations that live in the north, that it matters to everybody, that it is essential and vital to the future of Canada, because we're going to invest a ton of money in Arctic security and equipment to protect the Arctic. Fighter jets, drones, surveillance aircraft, early warning aircraft, submarines, frigates, icebreakers, Arctic offshore patrol vessels, as they're called, re-equipping the Rangers. Canadians are going to have to embrace and be told by the government why the Arctic matters. And that's not easy, because it's a bit like the invisibility problem of the military. The Arctic is invisible to most Canadians. How many Canadians have ever been up there, lived there, experienced the place? A tiny proportion. And in my own conversations with defense experts in Canada, I often feel this pushback. You know, why are we taking the Arctic so seriously? The Arctic doesn't really matter all that much. That's going to have to be a key part of the debate. I would say that there are three things that the government is going to have to sell Canadians on. The defense spending contributes to economic prosperity. That the military is a prime career for young Canadians. And thirdly, that Canada is going to have to devote resources to protecting our north. And all three of those educational projects are going to be extremely difficult. The Carney government's term, as long as it lasts as a minority government, and let's say that's going to be a considerable period of time, it's going to have to devote almost all of that time to that educational project, among other things, of course. But it's going to have to take it seriously. And that's something that no government has done since World War II.
Thank you very much, Wesley.
It's great. Enjoyed that. It's always fun.
And that's your Canada Land today. Thanks for listening. As always, you can email Jesse at jesse@canadaland.com. Our website is canadaland.com. I'm Bruce Thorson, senior producer at Canada Land. Audio production and editing today was from Caleb Thompson. Nora Azria read selections from Wesley Warwick's work. And we can thank Tristan Capicchione for his trumpet playing. Today's episode was fact-checked by Julian Abraham. Max Collins is our director of audio. And of course, Jesse Brown is our editor and publisher. Theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 in Victoria. Visit them at cfuv.ca.
Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. I'm Jesse Brown, and today we are talking about the news. We'll bring you some legitimately sunny news about solar energy, but mostly we'll talk about the sentencing of Tamara Leach and Chris Barber. And on today's show, I will admit that when it comes to the Freedom Convoy, I got it all wrong.
Most people here have been very civil. They have their strong views on vaccine mandates, about government overreach, about media coverage.
Wait for that. Max Fawcett, lead columnist for Canada's National Observer. Welcome back to the show.
Glad to be back, Jesse.
Max, you write opinion columns. What do you think of this guy, this opinion guy, Andrew Coyne?